The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 17th of November, 2020. On the podcast today, Bill Brody Good, CEO and Technical Director of Alien Metals. Ticker there is UFO. It's a good ticker, provides an update on their silver, copper and iron ore projects in Western Australia and Mexico. Also on the podcast, Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SP Angel, discusses COVID vaccines and Polarian Imaging. Also on the podcast, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent, now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's Bitcoin, blockchain and cryptocurrency news. And as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll all see lots for the content and our COVID-19 index. Let's have a look at the biggest rise of the day. It's Tech Capital. In fact, there's an article about them on the front page. Tech Capital up 11.4% at 9.7 pence. Biggest faller, Gene Drive, down 51.5% to 9.65% down, that is. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bill Brody Good, CEO and Technical Director of Alien Metals. UFO is the ticker. It's a ticker out of this world, Bill.
Yeah, morning. It is indeed.
Yeah, it's good to remember that. I mean, always have a rememberable ticker, you know, and that sticks in people's heads. And that definitely works there. But anyway, before we get into quite a few bits of news before we, since we last spoke, three bits of news you've released and about the projects. Before we get into those, just give people a reminder, Bill, what Alien Metals is all about, please, if you could.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Alien Metals, nice to speak to you again. Alien Metals is sort of exploration focused in the resource sector, our aim is sort of low cost acquisition of new projects and bringing up the value curve existing projects, finding partners to fund our exploration activities, and as we develop these projects and they come to the next level, bigger partners who take things forward, and obviously growth of all the projects, all this work in the background, adding value for the shareholder, increasing our capacity and our ability to add projects into the portfolio and move up, everyone move forward.
Yeah. And just to give a brief overview of where the projects are and what they involve.
Our core projects at the moment are in Australia and Mexico. I'd like to think a nice combination there, but two very, very stable and solid mining jurisdictions, so really well understood what we do, well supported. Australia, we have the Hancock and Brockman iron ore projects, currently 51% holding in those up in the Pilbara, world-class iron ore region, excellent projects. I'll talk a bit more about those in a little while. Mm-hmm. We finally managed to complete the deal on the Elizabeth Hill silver mine, where we've actually now acquired that 100% with the historic, incredible, high grade, one of the highest grade mines, definitely in Australia for silver, that never actually completed production. So very interesting from that sense. And recently we've pretty much secured a ground all the way around, a new fresh exploration lease, 474422, which is about 117 square kilometres of ground. That includes nickel, copper, platinum group element targets. Really exciting. And in Mexico, we have our Donovan 2 copper gold project with our colleagues Capstone, who have sort of signed in on earning agreement on that, and as I'll speak about in a minute, are working up that very well. And our two core silver projects, San Celso and Los Campos, which again, very excited about and working towards next stage work.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get into that. So going back further chronologically, you released an update on your drilling targets identified as Hammersley projects in Western Australia. Take us through some of the detail there, if you could, Bill.
Well, yeah, we had a team out with the whole COVID issue. Western Australia formed probably the largest bubble around, so that people within the state could move around, could work. So we were fortunate, got a team up on the ground. Looked at both project sites, managed to hit four of the five main prospects we'd identified, took nearly 100 samples, which is always excellent, because if you're taking that many samples I think they were up there for 12, 13 days in total, you know, you're getting good material. So really encouraged by what was seen, what was done. We are still waiting on the laboratory results, but as from our previous work, we did some XRF, portable XRF readings on the samples, came back really encouraging, essentially maintaining the direct shipping ore grade material that we'd already sort of located and understood to be there, expanded on what we believe are the potential size of these units, of these mineralized units, and we've come in with some pretty solid drill targets. That really is the next phase of work. We obviously need the laboratory results are essential to finalize all this, but I think it was end of last year, we did a similar process where we XRF'd some samples, and then the laboratory samples were within, as I recall, 5 to 8%, but sometimes higher, sometimes lower. So within a very close ratio of what the indications are from the XRF numbers. And, you know, we're getting, you know, 61%, 64%, 63%, 66%, some fantastic numbers for the XRF work, and more importantly, I think the geology, the interpretation of the units, the extent of the mineralized systems, has given us even more confidence that we, from our exploration target we issued a few months ago, we're actually even more encouraged by what we've seen now from on the ground. And as I say, we're now in the throes of hopefully getting a team back up there very soon to finalize some drill access locations, drill sites, so that then we can put in our application for the POW, which is the standard sort of permit one needs in Australia to do this sort of work. So yeah, excellent, really encouraged, very excited by it, and where we see it, you know, when the team was up there, there was a lot of activity. We know the majors are doing a huge amount of work. The iron ore industry up there is going great guns, and you know, the DSO, this high grade, super high grade material is sort of it's the icing on the cake, and we know that there will be interest as we develop, you know, these projects, put some drill holes in them, show, you know, the extent and the capacity of them. So yeah, it's good, it's very exciting, and it's great that we're able to do some work in these difficult times as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so last Thursday, you announced some encouraging soil sampling results from Elizabeth Hill Silver Project. That's in Western Australia as well, of course. So take us through that, if you could, Bill.
Well, that's right. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, we sort of picked up this sort of 117 square kilometre licence, sort of that wraps around the Elizabeth Hill mining lease. And as part of the deal, we, as well as acquiring a huge amount of historic data that had been compiled over the years by the various holders of this ground, There was also a series of soil samples that had been physically taken in 2019, had been well stored, indoors, in a dry environment. But the company who had actually taken the samples didn't have the funds to get them through the lab. So, as part of the deal, we got all the samples, we got the spreadsheets on where they came from and everything else. And first thing we did, we obviously sent those. Having the funds available, we put them through the laboratory and got the results back. Really interesting, really encouraging. There shows at least two quite strong anomalies in the soils in both copper, platinum group elements, nickel, related to a couple of structures that are coming up from the southwest into the towards the Natalie Hill area of the Elizabeth Hill project, but also on their new, to me they look like new targets that haven't really been worked up before. So that's great, because that gives us even more prospects and new information to start. Yeah, basically we've hit the ground running on this one. To be quite honest, I'm looking at the copper map at the moment and just thinking, I've already got in my head what our next phase of work will be. So we'll probably do some infill soils, get a team on the ground, do some geology, do some mapping over these areas that obviously haven't really had much attention up to now, but are showing in relation to the geology and in relation to the structures, which is very important in this part of the world and in terms of potential of mineralization, showing some interesting targets to work up. Mm-hmm. Great. Really, I couldn't really ask for a better start in that sense, because it's nice to have some actual physical fresh data rather than just reprocessing, which we're also working on anyway, the historic data. But it gives us, I'd like to say we've hit the ground running on this project already, and very interesting.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this as well. Mexico, you said that Capstan there, obviously your earning partner, commences their IP survey, Donovan 2. What's happening here?
Yeah, that's right. Capstone have been fantastic, I should say, from the start, from when we started talking. They've been always very positive, and I'm not sure if you noticed on the recent release, just to say, obviously, that they're actually started now. They decided to do an infill and an extension of the ground induced polarization geophysical survey that we had done to an extent in the past, their team are fortunate to have probably deeper pockets and bigger budgets, so they thought, let's just reconfirm and fill in a few of the blanks, sort of thing. So they're doing a pretty comprehensive IP survey now. Basically it just infills areas we'd already covered, plus a little bit extra new areas to the south, east, and very encouraging. And Brad Mercer, the VP Exploration, I thought was very encouraging by his comment in the RNS, just saying that. They look at a lot of projects, and obviously. Donovan 2 is of great interest to them, and I think that shows by their commitment to the project and the fact that, almost before the ink was dry, I know their technical team were like, right, let's get some guys on the ground, let's get moving. So, it's great. It's it's quite weird. I mean, I'm sitting here, with a project we've sort of worked on and I like and like to do more on, mm-hmm. and suddenly I've got, all these guys and ladies working away, beavering away at it, taking it to the next level. But we're involved, we're listening, we're watching, we're talking with them, and they're sharing all as the results are coming through, and so it's great. It's very
Okay. Well, if you could just pick out, say, one, you know, bit of news, one milestone coming up, what would it be?
We're in such a fortunate position that we have so many good projects, and you know, there are still a lot of things in the pipeline that still being impacted by COVID in terms of functionality of ministries. For example, in Mexico, we're like in the starting blocks. We have a drill rig available. We have the funds available. We know where we want to drill for the silver projects. Yet we need that final piece of paper from the government, from the ministry, sorry, to say, yes, you've ticked the boxes for your environmental baseline. Go ahead. So there is a meeting, I think, in 2 days' time with my team to hopefully, because I think even the ministry now has realized that they need to sort of adapt slightly to keep the ball rolling, because they want to, obviously, from a economic point of view, keep things moving. So I'd like to think that we get that in the next few days, and we can really, you know, get those drill holes in, because I'm very excited by what we're going to get from the silver projects, the iron ore as well. If we can get the team out there again, I'm talking to them in the morning, a quick recon, few days, because again, we've got to be conscious of the climatic conditions in that part of the world start getting incredibly severe around the Christmas and definitely the New Year period. So keep the ball rolling on those. Again, Elizabeth Hill, we've got all sorts of, we'll probably try and get a team up there before the end of the year, do a little bit of work. It's so easy to get there, it's accessible. You're 40 minutes from Karratha, which is a 2-hour flight from Perth. So you could almost, to be honest, do a day trip and a bit of recon, but we've got a little bit more than that to do. Just lots going on, and just trying, you know, keep the momentum going. As I say, we're fortunate we do have funds available for all this, to cover all this this work. I'm looking forward as a geologist to start really getting some results and getting some knowledge, increasing our knowledge and adding value to all the projects.
Mm-hmm. All the stuff. Okay, Bill. Well, three bullet points here, okay? Why someone should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Alien Metals to their watch list, please. And of course, by doing so, they get the RNSs straight to the front screen of their smartphone, so via notification. So what are the three bullet points?
I think our commodity spread is incredibly strong. We have iron ore, high-grade DSO iron ore, which is, you know, one of the strongest commodities in the market at the moment, with a long-term future ahead of strength, if not continued strength and rise. And the projects are looking great. We have the silver as well. Again, silver's doing really well. You know, all I hear about these days is about the new technology, the solar technology, renewable energy, and silver is a invaluable element in this technology as well. The copper, the copper project is also, copper's a significant important commodity for the future. So I think commodity wise we've got a great spread, so we've got sort of cover all bases. Projects, I think we've got great projects, you know, that all ties together, but really good jurisdictions, incredibly well known, respected, long history in Mexico, in Australia. And thirdly, I think we're moving forward. We're constantly working hard with a good team of people. We're sort of doing everything we can to advance the projects, increase the value for investors, obviously. But I'd like to say doing it in the right way, in the correct way, you know, spending the majority, everything we can on the ground, on the technical work, and, you know, making sure we spend investors' funds appropriately, and we will do going forward as well.
Marvellous stuff. Bill, good to chat to you, and hopefully, like I say, lots going on, so hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Yeah, no, that's great, and thanks. It's good to catch up, and yeah, no, for sure. And, as soon as we've got some more news, it'll be good to give you an update.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Vadim Alexander, head of an SP Angel. You all right, fella?
How you doing, Justin?
Yeah, I'm good. Listen, again, Monday, I did a video on Sunday saying, you know, buy the dip if it's a dip in the trend, you know, and I said, essentially, what I'm thinking of here is that the whole economy has been in a dip since COVID has been around, of course. But we know longer term stock markets will revert to mean, and growth and the economies of growth in the economy will revert. And I said, last Monday, not the Monday just gone, but previously at Pfizer, to me, that was the tide, turning tide, and that was us reverting to mean slowly. It'll be volatile because it's a while till vaccinations get out. But then I didn't see Moderna. I said Moderna's going to be next in a couple of weeks. I didn't see that coming out so quickly. So that's out now, Moderna, and it's looking very good on two respects. First of all, isn't it? The efficacy is higher than Pfizer, 94.5%, and transportation and distribution, the logistics around that can be easier because it only has to be stored at minus 20 rather than minus 80, and apparently can be up to a month in a normal sort of freezer fridge kind of thing. So that's going to help, isn't it? But I think now we are reverting to mean, and the stock market, I think, hopefully, we're back to normal in 6 months. What do you reckon?
Yeah, well, absolutely. The news is, as we discussed last time after the Pfizer vaccine came out, you know, the announcement, there's just going to be more and more news flow, positive news flow about vaccines. Certainly the first two, quite frankly, in the interim results have smashed it. I don't think anybody expected such a high, high rate of efficacy. So admittedly, the studies aren't complete. But look, with numbers this high, it's looking very good. Mm-hmm. And already on the second one, we have even improved on that. Yeah. So it is very positive. You know, we have every reason to believe that we have vaccines here.
Yeah. Do you know what's funny? You got these. I mean, there's a lot of social media breeds it. Conspiracy theorists, you know, and these conspiracy theorists who follow these people saying, "Oh, this was invented. These vaccines are not safe." What they don't understand, they criticise mainstream media for brainwashing, and they've been brainwashed by conspiracy theorists. If you look at the tests, I don't see how anyone could put a conspiracy on this kind of level, you know? You've seen how chaotic the government are. They can't foresight and forward plan theories and conspiracy. So basically, if you look at this, and the most important thing about new drugs is safety. You know, of course it's got to be effective, but the first and foremost, it's got to be safe. You can't just kill lots of people off, you know. So, and the safety trials on both these drugs, excellent. There's been no safety issues, and they've tested, you know, tens of thousands of people now. There've been no safety problems, and then you get efficacy, and that's good as well. So it's looking a lot better than we thought. And like I said, I just see it going back to normal, But if we look at the news flow, if you scroll forward now, both these companies, obviously this is just preliminary data, but both companies are applying for emergency use, acceptance. So what was it? EUA.
Yeah.
And
emergency use authorization
for the FDA.
It's matters of weeks.
No one seems to know how long it'll take. So it's just the FDA, you know. But yeah, like I said, from remarks from Pfizer and all that, it suggests it's going to be weeks because they assume they'll be, you know, distributing the vaccine in December. So again, you're going to get more positive news on these approvals if they happen. And I think if you look at the safety and the efficacy, it probably will happen. And then you've got AstraZeneca coming out. So I just think there's lots of positive news out on vaccines coming out, and there's lots more companies. So if you are in a stock that, and this is basically what I said, if you are in a stock that reacts negatively to good vaccine news, it's going to get worse because there's going to be constant good vaccine news coming out. And so be careful because, you know, you may not realize. And if you were in a stock that did well on the vaccine news, then it's good. Because I said that's basically the new trend, you know, because it's...
Exactly. And so remember, I think last week we mentioned this construct that we call the COVID premium, right?
Yeah.
So now, you know, with the second vaccine now, it's becoming clear, and it's well, I think it's now well entrenched that the positive news flow is coming on vaccines. It's already here, and it's only going to get, we're only going to hear more about other vaccines working from now until the end of the year. We're going to hear news flow about how distribution is probably going to be faster than we even expected. Because if you think about it, the hard part was creating a vaccine that works. The hard science has already been, you know, overcome. Mm. Now, not to say that it isn't difficult to distribute billions of doses, but, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And there is a will right now that is overwhelming. So we're going to, you know, throw every, you know, every bit of money at the problem of distribution, and we are going to get these vaccines.
You know,
whether we're going to get them in Q1 or Q2 is a nice problem, in my opinion, to have now that we know that vaccines work. So that news flow is coming. It's some of it, most of it, you know, I'd say, well, okay, most of it is always hard to say, but a lot of it is priced in to the COVID stocks, the stocks that were, that had a COVID premium. I certainly think there's a lot of stocks of a lot of healthcare companies that dabbled in COVID or had some potential COVID application. And that's probably still the case in some respects, because we haven't solved the COVID problem in its entirety. We've solved, you know, the vaccines deal with the lion's share of the problem. But is COVID still going to be around? Will we get mutations in the future, like the ones that we're seeing spread amongst the mink in Scandinavia? You know, so definitely there are future issues with COVID that still need a COVID response. That's a long-term response. Testing, as we've said in the past, companies like Novacyt will continue testing into the future. Mm-hmm. It's more the companies that have centered their whole story on COVID. Those are the ones that are going to get hit hard, have been hit hard, probably will continue to be hit hard, you know, as this news, as these this positive vaccine news continues to flow in. So you're right to say that if, I guess, the more granular element to what you were saying is, or me just extending it a little further, is to say that if the stories majored on COVID, be careful. If there's a minor offshoot of the business that had a COVID side story, I think some of it or most of it is priced in already, and the stocks have reacted, and the companies, the core stories, you know, those companies have reverted back to their core stories. Mm-hmm. And then the last little thing on healthcare is a lot of healthcare companies have been overlooked during COVID because they weren't in COVID. And as a result, things like elective surgeries were pushed out. You know, so we're probably going to see an echo in those companies because, you know, companies like Tissue Regenix are a good example. I own that stock. I like it because I think it was, you know, it came at good value in their last placing. Mm-hmm. You know, these companies have, they're in the area of orthopedic products. And, you know, we all know that orthopedic surgery, like knee replacements, hip replacements, all these types of things were postponed during the COVID crisis because operating theaters were being used to treat COVID patients. Now that's going to come back because inevitably people need to get their knees and hips replaced. So you're going to see an echo after. So it's, healthcare is not homogenous. Big companies that focused on COVID are going to get hit hard. Companies that had peripheral COVID stories have re-rated, and I think are probably, that's it for that. The re-rating has already happened. And then companies that weren't involved, but that were involved in all of the rest of healthcare, are probably going to see a bit of a boom in 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what's funny? Like you said, we talked about Plarium a lot, and that's taken a bit of a hit. And I think you described companies there that, you know, if they have a little offshoot, that COVID will help them is fine. But the ones to worry about, the ones focusing the entire, you know, business plan on COVID, on testing. Do you know what? I've just looked at the FDA site for emergency use authorization. They've got a table there of companies applying for emergency use. You would not believe how many companies are applying for emergency. And it's mainly testing. If you look at it, there's serology tests and all the stuff. It's loads of them. Yeah. I'm not just going to get through. So you got, I can't believe it. Like, it's like, what's the date today? Says, 11th to 6th. Oh, they do it backwards and they did dates. But literally, serology tests, loads of saliva collection device. There's loads of them. Mostly testing kits, home collection kits, saliva collection device. Yep. Wow. So I was trying to find out in some news on how long it takes, but I can't, just loads of people submitting. But anyway, we mentioned sort of Polarin as well. And like I said, they've got a massive market anyway. COVID expanded that market because, of course, it affects lungs and long COVID. That's a little dip. But they can't be far off having now, I think, when was it submitted? Fast track the FDA. It was like submitted in.
Yes.
So they can't be. And I knew I reported halfway through recently. I said, I tweeted about it saying they've gone halfway through because it's 7th of October. All right. So 7th of December.
So 7th of December.
Okay.
Exactly.
Well, they'll know. But,
yeah. So somewhere around that week. So it's 60 days to be precise.
Yeah.
And usually they take the full 60 days. So expect it sometime in that week. Mm-hmm. Now, again, this is just a nice to have, right? This, all this does, it's a very nice to have if they get it. If they don't get it, it's not the end of the world. It's back to their regular timeline, which is only 4 months difference, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying, I just don't know. It's 50-50 in my opinion. It could go either way. But the ultimate point is that it would be nice if they did get it, because then that would accelerate the launch till May, June, actually, May, June, instead of October next year, right?
Yeah.
So it brings the launch, the approval. So it just means that their approval date is bumped upwards to June, first week of June, instead of being the first week of October. And that's when you get your PDUFA day, so you expect your result.
Yeah.
Time and time again, we've said in the past, I don't see this as a big regulatory risk because this isn't a drug. It's a diagnostic testing. It's a diagnostic test, if you like. It effectively has very little downside risk because there are very few unknown unknowns with respect to xenon gas. The FDA knows it very well. So I don't expect any surprises on safety. The regulatory risk here I find is quite low. But yeah, it would be a nice to have to get the fast track approval. But again, don't want to set up the company for failure, because it wouldn't be a failure, because nobody ever expected them to file for priority review.
Yeah.
So it's a nice debt. It's a nice deadline that's coming in the first week of December. We'll see what happens. But either way, it doesn't matter whether they get it or not. If they get it, that's good news. If they don't get it, it doesn't change anything. It's just, it's back to their original story of getting an approval in October.
Yeah, well, I think if they don't get it, you may see a dip. There may be a chance to top up,
Well, that's true. No, I agree. Yeah. These things get priced in God knows what way, but they do. So you're right. There might be a bit of there might be some pullback. That's a very good point. It might provide an opportunity to buy, because it doesn't actually exactly as we just said, it doesn't fundamentally change the story, but it might, it might be an opportunity. You're right.
Yeah.
I mean, a good example is the COVID thing. The vaccine took kind of the heat out of the stock a little bit. It went up to just over 80p. And then it came back to about 65, 67p. And that was exactly it. It was an opportunity for people to buy, because the story was never centered around COVID. It was obvious that it has potentially a function in COVID, and there are some research centers that are doing work on that. And specifically, actually, in terms of COVID, actually, it's specifically in the long COVID side of the COVID issue. So it was never proposed for the acute side. And as we know, long COVID is an issue, and it's a big issue, actually. So even in the COVID story, if you look at it more from a more granular perspective, they're on the right side of the COVID equation. So it doesn't, the vaccine, again, doesn't really feature very much on the long COVID element. Obviously, it reduces the amount of people getting long COVID, but there are a lot of people who have long COVID now. So I think that work will continue.
Mm.
But in terms of Polarin, it was never the core story. The technology lends itself well into that area. But on the vaccine news, the share price came back a bit, and that was a good opportunity. And you've seen people buy, and it's brought the shares all the way back up to what I think 73 today.
Mm.
So yeah, you're right, Justin, to look at these moments as good opportunities. The COVID vaccine turned out to be a good opportunity for buyers.
Absolutely, yep. Buy the dip in an uptrend. Don't buy the dip in a downtrend, because it continues down. You say, hang on, I've bought some. That was basically the summary of my video on the weekend. Be careful where the trend is going, because if you're buying it in a downtrend, You keep losing money, basically. You're throwing money after good money after bad, or bad money after good.
Well, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And Polarian is actually, it's a perfect example of these stories that are, remember we mentioned the three buckets of companies, right? So there's the COVID story was a peripheral story, you know, in terms of it was interesting, but it wasn't their core story, you know, is COVID agnostic, if you see what I mean. Yeah. And it just provided, like you say, a dip for buyers to jump in. And the trend in this stock is, if you just look up the stock chart, it's exactly going in the right direction. So. Yeah. Definitely, this is one we like a lot.
Yeah,
you know, it's
absolutely. Yeah. I've held it for a while. I still think, you know, for this kind of tech and their market size, around about 100 million market gap, phase three passed, all that stuff. FDA, I think there's, you know, there's huge potential still up the upside here. You know, so I'm not worried about. I've seen, like I said, at the moment, I see companies that are valued, you know, way above this, and I think, what have they got? You know, it's just hype, most of it. There's a lot of it's in a hype. You know, it's ridiculous and short. You know, I just think you can't invest in a company whose, you know, business model may not exist within 6 months or 12 months. You know, you've got to have, and that is not, you know, like I said, with Polarian, it'll be around for 6-10 years at least, because it's taken 40 years for new tech to come in. Their tech has replaced something that was 40 years old. So see how long that lasts, you know?
Yeah. Hmm. You've got it. I mean, so. You know, if you look at the broad applications, this is all about the broad area of pulmonary medicine. You know, we mentioned COVID as one application. Yeah. This is one. If you look at the centers that they've placed these machines with, you know, we're looking at other big indications like, you know, pulmonary oncology, cystic fibrosis, idiopathic fibrosis, you know, COPD, asthma. The list goes on and on. Pulmonary medicine is a big field, right? Yeah. This technology lends itself well to all of those areas,
yeah.
And big research centers are doing work on them right now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so you know, just you know, to bring it back home, that's the point. That these are the multiple applications of this novel technology, mm-hmm. and it's of interest to those people because they're doing the work now and they're publishing papers on all these areas.
Yeah, absolutely, marvelous stuff. Vadim, good to chat to you as always, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. He is the crypto trader. He wears a crypto trader suit. It's very shiny. It's like made of foil and gold, silver colorings and a crypto hat. And he's got Bitcoin logos all over him. He's got a tattoo of Bitcoin on his forehead. All right, Glenn.
Yeah.
Sorry, not your forehead. On your back. A massive tattoo of Bitcoin symbol on his back. And with the sort of lightning going through it, but below that,
I have got Bitcoin socks.
Yeah, and below that,
I didn't buy them. I just want to make that clear. They were a free gift at a conference.
And below that, you've got the crypto trader with lightning going through the tattoo, the Bitcoin symbol there on the back. Massive, massive, huge.
Yeah, I'm a new addition to the Marvel universe.
Yeah, yeah. So cool. And you wearing your Bitcoin socks today as well? You wearing those
metaphorically? Okay. Not, I've never actually worn them in real life. No. I don't like that kind of thing. I feel like it's like, you know, those people who wear like a Father Christmas tie to the work do on Christmas. Mm-hmm. Those, you know, it's kind of a bit like that, isn't it? Wearing Bitcoin socks. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. I'm too cool, is what I'm trying to say. I'm too cool.
Yeah, well, we know that's true. Right, yeah. Listen, let me ask you a question. Why aren't you long Bitcoin?
I am.
You're not.
I am. What are you talking
about?
Don't
tell lies.
I'm not telling lies. Listen back to your old podcasts from several weeks ago. I bought in around, 11,000.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't. I didn't get out. Yeah. And it didn't dip. Yeah. It hasn't dipped.
Glenn, listeners of the podcast deserve the truth. If nothing else.
This is the unvarnished truth. Where...
All you dirty traders, you dirty traders, change your mind as fast as you make a trade, you know?
As fast as we change our Bitcoin socks.
Yeah. Which is not worth actually. okay, well, so you're still long. How much you got in there? How much money are you making?
Yeah, I've been long since, what is it? Well, since around about... God, I need to look it up. But around about September, October, when I bought in... And the breakout, you know, that's what I do.
You see, that's what I do. That's what I do. That's how I make money. That's why I got a book out. That's why I got a big tattoo on my back. You know what I'm saying?
This is the thing I've been waiting for, you know, like.
So are you making? Did you go big on it, or what, or just a little bit? What you know? What kind of exposure do you have to the Bitcoin?
I have a reasonable exposure to the Bitcoin, but no, I didn't go like.
Of what percentage?
All
of,
in,
I mean, how do we know? You know, how do you know how committed you were here? I mean, what percentage of your portfolio value have you gone long Bitcoin?
I don't. You know, I don't like to reveal my.
No, we're not. You talk about it in the book. You revealed everything. You've got. You know, you do pictures of yourself on Instagram with your tattoo on your back and all that stuff, and wearing nothing apart from your Bitcoin socks. You're
what?
Fully naked. But listen.
You're making it all up.
Yeah. But listen, No, I'm not asking what value of your portfolio is. We can't work it out. Just what percentage, you know, as of a total value of your portfolio, are you exposed Bitcoin? What is it? 5%?
I haven't
1%?
Calculated it.
2.5%? We must roughly know. 100%? 50%?
My exposure is it's you're talking around about 5% in Bitcoin, and I have several other cryptocurrencies as well. So my total exposure to crypto is probably no more than 10% of my portfolio, because it's so volatile. So you know, because I trade shares, commodities, everything.
You're so
annoying.
Okay. So can I ask you what percentage you're in cash at the moment on your portfolio?
But bear in mind, I was probably more. You know, I do that thing which I've talked about in the past, where I buy and then I'll take some profits along the way.
Have you taken profit on Bitcoin
the rest
since
of my exposure?
Have you taken profit on Bitcoin since you first went long on it?
A little bit, but not.
Oh,
much.
What is wrong with you, Glenn? Go big on it,
only a
fella.
Tiny
come
bit.
On, put Jeez. A bit of conviction in there.
Look, put it this way. I'm making tons of money on Bitcoin, right? What more do you want to hear? I mean, it's pouring in, the money. It's pouring on top of me, and I can hardly breathe for the amount of money that's pouring on me.
So what,
right?
Do you
want to hear?
What about now? Do you think it's going to come pull back or what? Is the pullback on the cards?
It's been in a big rally now for more than a month and a half, and it hasn't pulled back. Hardly at all during that time.
We're going to short it.
Which is kind of remarkable. It is very strong.
When do you short it then?
I don't. In a strong bull market like this, as a trend follower, I follow and I keep with it. As I say, I've only taken a tiny bit of profit along that way. And I've got various other cryptocurrencies as well. So I'm following them all. I'm keeping them all. I'm holding them all. But because it's looking like it's entering a sort of parabolic rise, which was the kind of the impetus for writing my book, was at the end of 2017, you had that massive parabolic rise. And I called not exactly the top, but near the top, because I could see just as it rounded the top that there was a huge burst of volume, tons and tons of people buying, and then a sharp sudden decline that went with that volume, which was a massive warning sign to me. And I made a public warning at the time on Facebook, and started selling all my cryptocurrencies soon after, while many other people held on from $20,000 all the way down to $3,500. I didn't do that. So, you know, I would like to repeat that trick this time. I did when it had that rise to 14,000 last year. It would be nice to do it again. It's always difficult, though, because you don't always get that huge slug of volume at the top as a warning sign. Sometimes you just get the price decline without the volume, and then you're like, is this definitely the top? Not sure. So I'm not saying that. In fact, I am fairly confident that this is the beginning of a bull market rather than the end. So if we do get a kind of sudden peak and a slug of volume, I would expect that to be a temporary peak. So I might not even sell all my Bitcoin at that point. I might just sell a portion of it, take some profit, wait for a decline, a pullback, and in anticipation of then a larger rise. Because, and the main reason why I don't think this is the peak is because there's just nowhere near as much interest in Bitcoin as there was in 2017. I touched on this last week. If you look on Google Trends, you will see that Bitcoin, you know, Google searches for the word Bitcoin were extremely high back in 2017, and they're nowhere near that point now. You know, the popular imagination hasn't quite latched on yet, and I think that's because we haven't beaten the 20,000 price of last time. We're still at 16,700, so it's only when we reach 20,000 that suddenly it hits the news headlines again, and I think that's when people will start getting interested, and that's when more money will start pouring in.
Right, have you finished?
Yeah, that's my synopsis.
Wasn't it? God. Have you got a chart software in front of you right now?
Yeah.
Can you look at it? Do you have an RSI on the chart? Can you put an RSI on there? Relative strength index. Because I'm going to show you two technical interesting bits here on the chart, right? And I want you to go to a weekly first. A weekly and a monthly.
Right, okay.
First of all, a weekly, all right? If you've got a weekly, I'll show you. Right now, the RSI, and this is obviously weekly trends, I mean, weekly chart means it shows stronger trends, stronger, longer trends. The RSI is at 80. Now, even in the previous rally, it failed to get above 80. But previously, when it's done this, this is a very bullish setup. 80 on the RSI on a weekly. It's gone up, basically, had a couple of dips. But literally, last time it did that, it went from, I'd say, 7,000 up to 19,000. And then it went from, in fact, the first couple of times it did that, it started rising massively. That was a bit before the 2008 bull market. Now, if you go to a monthly even, so you're right, it's probably the start of a massive... it's never finished on a monthly level this high before. But it's the lead time is, like I said, gone above that 70 on the RSI in the monthly, was in the first sort of rallies back in whenever people weren't investing in it, but massive moves from nothing to $1,000 or something, and it came back down. And then again, it started doing that on the 1st December 2016, and as you see, 2 years pretty much, of course there's volatility, but 2 years of going from, $1,000 to $20,000. So right now, it's just touching at 70 on the RSI in the monthly. I think, of course, there'll be pullbacks, but I think this is at the start of a massive move, Glenn.
Buy the dip. Could be. Though looking back at the problem with RSI, obviously, it's a derivative of price. So when you look back at the RSI from looking at the previous times where it broke through 70,
on a weekly. Okay, no, not 70, 80 on a weekly.
Yeah, but 80. When it breaks through 70, that's when the rise generally starts. And then when it breaks through 80, sometimes, but not always, you're sort of getting more towards the latter part of a move.
No, if you look at the 80s.
In 2019, for example. Yeah, but it's it didn't
get above 80 on 2019. On the weekly.
I got to about 80.
No, I got to 79, didn't get above 80. Now, that right now is above
79.
Yeah, but right, that's a telling point, though. Right now it's above 80, and it didn't do that. Last time it did that was in December, rising above it, 27th of November 2017, and that was a big rise. And then previous to that, so I think this is a good time. Very bullish in Bitcoin. That's why I've been long since 2013.
No, you haven't. You just made that up.
Oh, yeah, I did, actually, yeah.
Oh, thank God. I thought I'd just missed something very important that you'd just forgotten to mention this entire time we've been talking. But no. Where were we? Yes, RSI. Okay, so it's a good long-term sign, but yeah,
All I'm saying, Glenn, you will speak. Yeah? You can trade in and out like a crazy loon, you know, getting stressed and wondering where the breakouts happen. But if you'd just gone long and strong and just chucked everything in at the start, you'd just all be laughing your head off now. And you wouldn't have to trade.
You wouldn't have to trade around. If I'd bought Amazon in 1998, I'd never have had to trade anything. Mm. And did you hold on to it till now?
Trading never works. 99% of people lose money trading, you know. The odd lucky people do well. It's a false economy, trading.
Right. Well, as opposed to buying, you know, index funds in the FTSE 100, which have gone nowhere for the past.
Who would buy an index fund in the FTSE 100? No, but no one with half a brain would do that.
People, that's what financial advisors often tell people these days.
Do you know what? Let me just say one thing. I don't know who said that. Give me evidence on that, okay? Anyone says to you, buy a FTSE 100 tracker, which in fact is pointless, give me evidence. Anyone listening to this, they are simple. They shouldn't. And ask them if they've ever made any money in the stock market. They probably haven't. If anyone's told you to buy a FTSE 100 tracker, don't. It's ridiculous. It doesn't work. In fact, unless you're a high dividend paying, reinvesting dividends, maybe you would have got some gain. The gain you would have had from that would be better than banks if you'd got to reinvest dividends on a FTSE 100.
There's risk involved, so it should be better than banks.
Not really, because a lot of banks are in the FTSE 100, so you essentially, you know, it's not, you know.
There's a risk of, you know, 50%.
If you all your money's in a bank, while you go through, what are you protected at these days? FCA, is it first 80 grand or 50 grand?
85,000.
85 grand, yeah. And if the bank goes through, so let's say you had £1 million in a bank account, right? You'd be protected for 85 grand. If you put that in a tracker fund and that bank going through, probably, you know, that it's only one of 100 stocks. It's less risk than a FTSE tracker.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Mm. Well, as everything else I say is, you know. okay. Cool. All right. So anything else? What's the next move? Anything else worth looking at, Glenn? What's any other thoughts on Bitcoin? Any news on Bitcoin?
Yeah, there's been more. I mentioned a week or two ago that JP Morgan had, for the first time, made that company which used to be rude about Bitcoin, the chief executive a few years ago, saying very disparaging things about how useless it is and it'll never amount to anything. Well, words along those lines, I'm paraphrasing, so don't sue me, because I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was nothing good, put it that way. Whereas now, JP Morgan released a report a couple of weeks ago extolling the virtues of investing in Bitcoin. It's basically making out it has a bright future. And now we've got the same from Citibank. A senior analyst at Citibank penned a report drawing on similarities between the gold market in the 1970s, which I'm sure you'll remember boomed enormously, and drawing similarities between that and Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And saying that, you know, similar kind of situation going on. He's saying, you know, basically the money printing narrative, you know, banks are printing money, devaluing fiat currencies. This has historically been good for gold and probably will be again. But now Bitcoin is the new gold, says the analyst. It moves across borders easily. And he likes the fact that ownership is opaque because he thinks that the fiscal deterioration, you know, basically when governments, you know, are desperate for money. They're spending so much of it and they're printing so much of it and it's becoming worth less and less. There comes a point in currency crises where governments get desperate for money and they start trying to find ways to get money from the population who are generally trying to hide it from the government, trying to keep it from them because they know the government's suddenly become kleptocratic. So, you know, this is a kind of disaster scenario, but he's basically saying because Bitcoin is opaque, because it's harder to track down the owners of Bitcoin, it could become more popular than gold if governments are spending massively and depreciating their currencies, which they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that make sense? Yeah, that makes sense.
But it's odd, isn't it? How they've just gone super bullish when now they happen to be a big investor in it.
I don't know if they are a big investor in it. He's not saying. But anyway, the point is he expects it to go up massively. What's his prediction? He has a prediction. They shouldn't do predictions. It's very silly. But he's looking at something like $300,000 for Bitcoin. Bear in mind, it's currently at $16,000. So that would be a pretty, pretty massive rise, like a 20-fold rise almost.
Okay.
Do you believe him?
I don't know what to believe anymore, to be honest, you know.
Well, once you start hearing these kind of wild predictions, you know that the market's hotting up, because this is what happened in 2017, wasn't it? $1 million Bitcoin and all the rest of it before it fell by 90%.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree. Everything's, I just think it's been a very bullish time. On a pullback, I'm not involved in Bitcoin, but if there's a big pullback, maybe I'll get involved.
Well, I'm certainly looking. What I'm trying to do is diversify out of Bitcoin and not just be all Bitcoin, Bitcoin, Bitcoin. So I've been buying up some smaller cryptocurrencies, like I said, increasing my exposure. I do intend to increase the percentage of my overall portfolio that's dedicated to cryptocurrency, slowly but surely. Whenever I see a good breakout on a chart, a good opportunity in a cryptocurrency that I think has got a decent future, then, you know, I put in a bit more money there, a bit more money here. So slowly but surely, I'm expecting to become more and more exposed to cryptocurrency, which makes sense because we're now, by the looks of it, in a new bull market, whereas we had been in a bear market for a couple of years. So whilst I was still in and out of Bitcoin, you'll of course know, because I always told you about my woes over the past couple of years, even though I was in and out of it and making some money here and there, I was trying to keep it on the down low, trying not to invest too much because I knew we were in a bear market. Now we're in what is at the very least a sideways market, but is probably a proper bull market now. I'm going to continue to increase my exposure, I expect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I'm playing it by ear. Playing it by ear, mate.
Yeah, cool. Marvellous stuff. Right, Glenn, thanks for that. Yes, no, good. That's all very good. like it, yes. Listen, let's have a go. And you've been wonderful. And, you know, get that tattoo finished off. There's a couple of spelling mistakes in the back on the tattoo, you know.
Yeah, will do.
If you want to see Glenn's tattoo, get an Instagram. Is it Glenn Bad Boy Goodin? Is that what it is?
What?
Your Instagram account.
Yeah, Glenn Inky Bad Boy.
Yeah,
like tattoo focused account. That's where I've got, you can see my whole face is covered. I'm getting my eyeballs done next week.
Yeah. Cool. Let's set it up before I publish the podcast. Cheers, Glenn. Speak next week.
Okay, see ya.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Market in the last 24 hours. They are at five. What is it? It's Salt Lake Potash at four. Iconic Labs. Salt Lake is down 2.5% to 3.5, or 30.5%, sorry. At four, Iconic Labs down 1.85% to 0.0132. At three, Omega Diagnostics down 4% pretty much, or 3.98 to 54.25. At two, Rambler Metals and Mining down 5.56% to 0.255. And at one, they're all down, these Remote Monitored Systems, down 33.33% to 2.8p. Okay, it's time for the top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, 88 Energy proposed placing to raise up to $10 million. Alien Metals, change in company joint brokers at four. Omega Diagnostics, UK RTC update at three. Bahamas Petroleum, operation update, Perseverance 1 well at 2. Tech Capital placing to raise 380 grand at 1. Let's have a look at most viewed a second. It's always interesting to see what people's eyeballs are going over if they're not liking it, you know. Anyway, but let's look. 88 Energy at 5. Remote Monitor Systems at 4. Remote Monitor Systems again, Holdings at 3. Gene Drive at 2. Final results there. And Omega Diagnostics at one with the most red RNSs, most viewed. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.